You're listening to the Journey to the Draft podcast, presented by AAA.
Hello, everyone. I'm Chris McPherson, and welcome to another edition of the Journey to the Draft podcast, presented by AAA. I am really, really, first and foremost, glad to be back.
That's not true.
Probably isn't. I did miss you guys.
You had a nice long vacation.
I had a nice long vacation, but I miss doing the podcast. I remember I took off time out of my vacation to do the podcast 2 weeks ago, so I did miss it last week.
You come back, you got your nice new mug.
Got the brand, you know. You gotta get the mug at Disney World.
Yeah,
2014. So you know, I always remember that great family vacation. But with me, as always, the ever so versatile Beau Wolf, who did an outstanding job hosting last week's podcast. With
Thank
Brian
you.
Baldinger. Very, very nice work by you.
Present here.
And the Predator himself, the one-man band, the guy who could do it all, Mr. Fran Duffy.
Yeah, had a great week last week. Sorry you weren't here to see it. But
You guys were phenomenal. I didn't see it regardless. I did hear it. I believe I was driving through Virginia when I listened to the podcast. And the only horror story that I have regarding the trip itself was we pulled into the town of Florence, South Carolina, thinking, all right, you know, we'll get a hotel, we'll crash here for the night. There were like 20 hotels in the area. I must have called 25, getting shot down left and right.
You called 5 hotels that didn't exist?
Yes, I did. I was calling like the exit before, the exit after. I was calling like, you know, the corporate line, and they'd be like, there's no hotels within a 25-mile area. I'm like, what is going on here? Like, what is the big deal? And what's the big draw in Florence, South Carolina? And it turned out NASCAR was going on at Darlington. And I was pretty much off the grid for the entire vacation. So I didn't know that there was the NASCAR race Sunday in Darlington. So
I was on the grid and I didn't know.
You probably fit right in, though, in Florence because you're just driving around in circles
exactly,
looking for a hotel.
Exactly. So we finally found one place. It was literally the last room. They were like, it's a single bed. It was a smoking room. It was decrepit as can be, but you know what? It got the job done for the night. Got my 6 hours of sleep, and we were back on the road.
It's good to hear.
So we have a great show for you this week. We have Tony Pauline from DraftInsider.net, our resident draft guru. He's going to give us the latest Eagle scoops and give us some insight on what he thinks the Eagles might do, especially at the wide receiver position. But first, we're going to get into some news in our segment called They Are Who We Thought They Were. And so how we're going to set this up is I'm going to give a couple clues regarding the prospect that we're going to discuss.
Okay.
And Bo and Fran, they're going to see if they can guess who it is. I didn't want to make it too difficult.
I'm an overwhelming underdog in this against Fran.
No. Nothing. No. These are guys that I think everyone's heard of that have been discussed
on the
show.
We're talking about the guru over here.
I understand.
I'll try and take it easy. I'll let you guess first.
You'll let them guess first. So Brian Thomas, our producer, are we good? Let's make this happen here. So the first clue, the prospect, 6'3".
Okay.
Obviously, not going to, you know, get any guesses there.
Not Michael Campanaro, that means.
Sorry.
Okay.
Sorry to disappoint you there. 6'3". Next, he was a quarterback in high school.
Okay.
He's not a quarterback now, coming into the draft. And he was projected as an Eagles pick in Tommy Lawler's mock draft.
Jordan Matthews.
No.
No.
That's not what I was going with.
No. Then
the other second day pick.
Oh, well, I know who it is now. This would have been my other guess.
Is it Marcus Smith?
It is Marcus Smith. Yeah.
They are who we thought they were.
Very nice work there by Bo.
A little drop.
Louisville edge rusher Marcus Smith was scheduled to visit the Eagles on Monday. Gentlemen, your thoughts?
I think the Eagles, and we talked about this with Baldy last week, Baldy thinks that's the one position where they really need to find a difference maker for the next few years. I don't know if Marcus Smith is that difference maker, but I certainly think we expect the Eagles to add somebody at that edge rushing position. And Marcus Smith is a very productive guy. He was the defensive player of the year, played on that great defense. Calvin Pryor is going to get drafted before him, but he was the guy who people looked at in terms of production. And, I got nothing wrong with that.
And if you're talking about Marcus Smith, you're talking about versatility, a guy who played a number of different roles in that Louisville defense as a stacked linebacker, as a three technique, as a rush linebacker, as a hand in the ground defensive end. So a guy who's got some athleticism and has some positional versatility that you like to see.
All right. Our next guy here, he played against Chip Kelly in the Pac-12.
Okay.
Anthony Barr.
Jeez, see?
They nice. Are who we thought they
were. He's wasting no time.
Nice. Well, he sees, I had he to sees come the back. Trend. He I had sees the trend. Yes.
Well, I had to come back. I had to, after losing the first one, I had
Jeez,
to
Jeez, salty
take
dog
one.
Over here. Franz the animal.
I think he might have been looking at your notes.
It is 1-1. So Anthony Barr is the first reported, I believe, by Ian Rappaport of NFL Media, and other national reporters have added on to it. Anthony Barr scheduled a visit with the Eagles next Wednesday. I know you guys talked a lot about Barr on last week's podcast. Brian Baldinger was raving about him. Your take on Anthony Barr making it all the way to 22, it seemed like it'd be a very precipitous drop for him.
I think Bo and I are in full agreement in this one that we both really like Anthony Barr. Having him at 22, getting a shot at him, right, even the late teens, would be a great fit.
Todd McShay's last draft had Anthony Barr out of the first round, so I don't know what he's hearing. Maybe it's an injury question or something like that, but it seems like now there maybe is a possibility that he's going to be there at 22, and injury questions aside, I think that would be a great fit.
Cowboys have also reportedly been showing a lot of interest in Barr as well, and they're a little bit ahead of the Eagles in the draft pecking order at 16, if I am correct.
See, like, that would be interesting to me, is because if you're going to draft him to play in that defense, like, what is his role? Because they're not a 3-4 team anymore.
Exactly.
They're a 4-3 team, so you're going to draft him to play strong side linebacker. He's not playing D-end in that scheme. So that's an interesting match there.
They're not going to draft him.
Yeah.
All right. Our next, they are who we thought they were, prospect here. He was the number one defensive end prospect coming out of high school.
The Florida linebacker.
Ronald Powell.
Ronald
correct,
Powell.
Correct. We give it like
they are who we thought they were.
We'll give a little tag team
air,
effort.
Air fist bump.
One and a half. One and a half. Yeah, Brian good. Thomas, our producer, agrees with me on that one. Jimmy Kempski from Philly.com reports that the Eagles have shown high interest in edge rusher Ronald Powell from Florida.
Ropo.
Injury questions galore. Tore ACL in his knee twice, if I'm correct. Your take on the Eagles maybe trying to get the next Bryce Brown, the guy who was a big-time prospect coming out of high school but didn't quite have the college career that everyone expected.
Yeah, and I know Jimmy has looked at it before, how many players on the Eagles roster were high-ranked prospects coming out of high school, and maybe the Eagles see something there trend-wise, maybe underachieving college careers, and they still have the athleticism to produce in the NFL. I don't know too much about Ronald Powell as a prospect, certainly not as much as Fran does, but it sounds like he was a bit of an underachiever there. There are some character concerns, but I think if you have a chance to land a talented guy and he will buy into the system, then by all means.
I mean, you're talking about a guy who has all the physical tools you want. He's got the athleticism to play in space, played in coverage, was able to drop with tight ends and receivers, obviously can bend on the edge and can give you some value as a pass rusher. So could be a guy in the middle rounds that you're looking at as good value for the Eagles.
All right, the last one I got here, he is only 20 years old.
Right up Bo's alley. Bo likes the younger prospects.
100%.
Right. That's, yep. Okay, so first clue.
First team all Pac-12 last year. Did play against Chip Kelly, obviously.
Well, he could have played four. So
I'm saying he played
so
against.
He didn't play for Oregon.
Played
okay.
against, so it's not an Oregon prospect. Played guard. Well,
do you know?
I've got to get Brandon Cooks.
No, close. Wow. No.
Well, now that part of the game is I get another clue now.
Played interior O-line, guard and center. Center last season.
Marcus Martin.
Correct.
They are who we thought they were.
Gave a nice little push there towards the end. Last name Martin.
Listen, scoreboard, buddy.
NFL.com's Mike Huguenin reports that USC interior lineman Marcus Martin will meet with the Eagles. Martin projected to go second day, and obviously the Eagles already have Jason Kelsey. You know, the guard positions, they have trusted veterans in Evan Mathis and Todd Harriman's. Could the Eagles use a high pick maybe for down the road, depth purposes? What's your guys' take on Marcus Martin and him as a prospect fitting in with Jeff Stoutland's O-line crew?
He's a great run blocker. I mean, that's what he stood out in at USC. Showed the ability to play guard. He played guard two years ago, and then this past season played center for them after their center graduated. Just a really mauler on the front lines.
And I would not be surprised to see the Eagles take an interior offensive lineman in this draft. We love Todd Harriman and Evan Mathis, but they're both a little bit older, both over 30. At some point, that line has to be turned over just a little bit. And we've talked about this with Baldy. There are guys on the team here in the backup interior line who we think are going to be good, but we don't know much about them. You don't we haven't seen him play because the offensive line was so together last season. But if you can have a chance to add a stud who can replace Mathis or Harriman's down the road, I think it's a definite possibility.
35 career starts and 34-inch arms for Marcus Martin. So
34-inch pythons.
Impressive. Yeah. So that is our segment called They Are Who We Thought They Were.
They Are Who We Thought They Were.
Certainly. Now, our next segment here on today's podcast is On the Clock. What I'm going to do is propose two prospects at a position, and Bo and Fran will pretend as if they're the GM of the team, that they're Howie Roseman, and they're getting ready to make the call. Who would they select if they were on the clock? And a big assist can go to our producer, Brian Thomas. We're going to bring him into the show because he's going to be our timekeeper for this, limiting our contestants here to 30 seconds each. And Brian, first and foremost, welcome to the show. Doing a phenomenal job, the man behind the scenes. We're finally bringing you a little bit into the forefront here.
It's about time.
It is about time. Yeah. Yes, indeed.
Just being honest here.
Brian Thomas, for those of you who might not know, is famous because he was featured on last weekend's coverage of the Masters Tournament. He was shown in the gallery cheering on Bubba Watson, even extending his hand out, looking for some love from the eventual Masters champ on the final day of the tournament, and you were kind of denied.
Look, I'm all about support, and, you know, Bubba was going to his final push in the back nine. I wanted to give him a little bit of a, you know, morale boost, and he totally just played me. I mean, totally played me, and I really have, you know, I'm happy, you know, he won and all, but
I'm not. I don't like Bubba.
Look, well, from what I heard from when he's down there, apparently he's the biggest baby on tour.
And he's always whining.
He's constantly complaining, and people
always whining, always moaning about the crowd making noise, always blaming his caddy for a bad shot. I can't stand him.
Well, wait, this is interesting. So Saturday he hits his final shot into 18, and it goes off to the left side of the green. So he's chipping up. He looks at the ball, and he's just like disgusted. His caddy comes over and says to the crowd very condescendingly, "Can you guys move your shadows? Because we don't need more distractions than what you've already done."
Really?
Like, whoa. Wow. So I know the Masters is obviously a big tournament, and those guys are, you know, it's a prestigious award, but
it's a thing. It's a thing for Bubba. He does it all the time.
Right. So 85% of those guys, all real nice dudes. I hear Bubba's can be a little bit of a pain.
So that wasn't your only brush with greatness during the tournament, though.
That was not. I was also hit by a ball. The ball seeking me out by Jamie Donaldson, Welshman, as Bo mentioned. And ball came at me and kind of bounced and hit my foot. I kind of, you could say maybe I played it up a bit as if a European soccer player arriving in pain. He comes up and says, "Sorry, I hit your ball. Sorry, I hit you, chap." And he's like, "I'll get you the ball afterwards." And then he didn't really apologize. He kind of was more upset that I was in the way of his bad shot. So.
But he did give you the ball.
He did give me the ball. I'll bring it in for confirmation. There's nothing special, but he's a lion, and it's the Welsh colors. So
really,
yeah.
So will you ever do anything with that ball? Will you, you know, use it? Will you just keep it on the shelf?
I was thinking about that. I mean, it's Jamie Donaldson, so most people will probably think I'm making this up. You know, they really have no idea. You know, it wasn't Bubba who hit me. You know, so I was thinking about using it, but I may make a little memento out of it. You know, a little Masters memory, a little shrine.
Nice.
You know,
very nice. So
I'm hoping to make it back next year to. You know, year number two. So
all right, money bags.
And I actually have a 2% chance of playing the course. Just FYI,
2%
chance. I met a guy who's played the course over 30 times. He was actually a huge football fan.
Oh, you pulled the Eagles card, didn't you?
I actually pulled the Eagles card. and then he was even more impressed by the business card. It actually, you know, cemented that I actually worked for the team. I think he was a little skeptical. He was on a plane ride, so he's a little skeptical.
Okay.
Said, "Hey, give me a shot if you're in Philly. Love to give you a tour." You know, smooth the whole thing. So he says, "Hey, if I ever get a chance, I'll, you know, maybe we can work something out and come down to Augusta." And I said, "Look, I'll do whatever it takes. I'll walk to Augusta with my bag if I have to."
Just remember who your favorite co-host is of the Journey to the Draft podcast.
No. Well, you guys go way back, so
I can't
compete with that. So now we're going to delve into our On the Clock segment. So Brian's going to be the timekeeper for this. And the first one, with a lot of people projecting the Eagles looking at wide receivers in this year's draft class, our first on-the-clock battle is going to be Marquise Lee, or from LSU, Odell Beckham Jr. Bo, I'll give you the honors to go first here.
That's a tough one. And, you know, this is a silly thing because we don't have the perfect information that they do. But if forced to pick, I think I'd go Odell Beckham. I think there's a little more upside. I think he's a little bit more explosive. He, you know, I think Roto World did the thing last year of the stats where he was the most explosive downfield. The most percentage of his catches were 10 to 15, 15 to 20 yards of those elite receivers beyond Sammy Watkins and Mike Evans. I think I'd barely go Odell Beckham, and then the cementer is the one-handed catch of the kick return that Fran brings up.
Thank you.
I was going to bring that up, but I would agree that it would be Odell Beckham for me. ODB, as you guys have
shimmy, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
That's old school.
Just a guy who's unbelievable at the catch point, great route runner, good blocker, just a great all-around player. Obviously ran pretty well at the combine, had a really good workout there in Indianapolis, and is a guy who really can do it all from the wide receiver position. So I'd go ODB.
Number two, we're going to go to the defensive backfield, the men who will be covering the wide receivers. Do you go Ohio State's Bradley Roby or Michigan State's Darquez Dennard? Fran, you're up first.
It would be an interesting decision. I like Roby a little bit more just in general, just because I think he's a little bit more versatile scheme-wise. I think he's obviously a little bit more athletic, much more dynamic of an athlete. But listen, Darquez Dennard is an unbelievable press corner, a guy if you're going to put him in a scheme and tell him to play at the line of scrimmage, he's going to beat receivers at the line and out-muscle them at the catch point. He's a guy who doesn't panic. We talked about him last week with Brian Baldinger. Big fan of Darquez Dennard. If I'm going to, you know, make a decision, I'm going with Bradley Roby.
I would take Dennard, a little bit more consistent. You know, Roby got torched by Aberderis that one game. Darquez is a little bit handsier. That's one thing that people think they're going to have to teach him to do at the next level is not be quite so handsy. But I think I'd go Dennard. Maybe a little bit better ball skills, but not quite as explosive. Is that fair?
That's fair. Yeah, for sure.
All right, number three. We already talked about this one prospect, Anthony Barr, or the man who apparently has jumped above him if you read and listen to draft experts, Khalil Mack from Buffalo. Bo, you go first.
We've had this discussion in the past. I mean, for me, it's Barr. It sounds like Mack is going to be the guy who goes earlier, but Barr is the guy who I'm more interested in, a little bit more athletic, a little bit more explosive. I like that he's newer to the position, but not really raw. He's got some talent to dream on. And Mack, he was great against Ohio State, but he did play a lower level of competition. I think I'd go Barr.
I would agree. I would go for this team, for this scheme and what they look for. I would agree that I would go Anthony Barr over Khalil Mack, only because Anthony Barr, you're as a guy that you can put out in space and you can say, you know, cover, run with receivers, run with tight ends, run with running backs out of the backfield. Mack isn't a bad athlete by any stretch, but he's not a guy that I would say is going to consistently do that to the level that Anthony Barr will. Obviously a dynamic pass rusher, only played the defensive side of the ball for 2 years and had 23 and a half sacks, and Khalil Mack played there all 4 years and had 24. So the production's there. The athleticism is there. The upside's there. I'm going to go Anthony Barr.
Oh, gee. Fran would just go on and on for hours here. So thank goodness we have BT here. I want to go on the defensive side of the football. Some mock drafts are now starting to project inside linebackers for the Eagles. So I'm going to go with two here. Fran, you kick us off. Ryan Shazier from Ohio State or C.J. Mosley from Alabama?
If I had to pick, I'm going to go C.J. Mosley. Basically, I think Mosley brings everything you want off the field. Is obviously has been a huge leader for the Alabama Crimson Tide over the past couple of years. Has been a captain of that defense. Great tackler, shows great range in the middle of that defense, and really is just one of the best all-around players defensively on this draft. And really down the road for the Eagles, I think is probably a better role. You're looking at Shazier as a guy who's probably going to play Michael Kendrick's role.
Just keep buzzing. Make it like the Academy Awards and we'll just pull him off the stage. Here,
you know Fran won't stop, so.
That's true.
C.J. Mosley for sure for me. As you said, I think he's a better overall player. Shazier, not quite a great fit in this defense. He's very skinny, very light. I think Mosley is a guy, and he's a guy who I'm sort of hoping will be there for the Eagles at 22.
All right, I'm going to go to the offensive side of the ball for a couple of these. Let's talk about a position that really hasn't come up with the Eagles, but you never know. Could be another offensive weapon that Chip Kelly and Howie Roseman might want to add to the mix. Tight end. Now, Eric Ebron, I think we all would agree, is the number one consensus tight end. But the battle for number two is, you know, there are a couple of players in the mix. And I'll throw two names here for you guys. Austin Seferian Jenkins, the Mackey Award winner, or Troy Nicholas from Notre Dame.
Nicholas, I think, is a little bit more of a traditional tight end. He's a better blocker. Although Seferian Jenkins is a pretty good blocker as well, I believe. That's a tough call. I think I'd go Nicholas. I think he's a better fit for this defense, although certainly Chip knows Seferian Jenkins well, or for this offense, rather.
I it's funny. I actually had this exact discussion with somebody yesterday. I would go with Seferian Jenkins. Obviously, you're taking all the off-the-field stuff, and we don't know all the details of that. But just on the field, going by the tape, I mean, you've got a guy who's a really great blocker, and a good receiver, and then you have a guy who's a really great receiver and a good blocker. And if you know, all things considered, I'm going to go with the guy in this day and age in the NFL who's the really great receiver and the good blocker, and that's Safarian Jenkins to me.
Our next segment here on the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA, none other than what we're going to call over-under. Basically, I'm just going to offer some predictions, set a mark, and then our boys here will debate whether they think it's going to be the over or the under. Very, 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 very simple stuff here on the podcast. So,
and we're going to keep track of these to find out who wins.
Yes, we will do that. We'll start here with, we've been talking about wide receivers. We'll stick with the wide receivers. How many wide receivers will be taken in the first round of the 2014 NFL draft? I'm going to set the mark at 5.5. Bo?
5.5. That's high. I'm going to go at, I'm going to go under. I'm going to go 5.
You're going 5. So you're going to under.
That's a good mark.
That's a good mark.
I'm trying to play Vegas here.
Well, let's see. You've got Sammy Watkins. You got Mike Evans. You're going to assume Kelvin Benjamin. Odell Beckham. Marquise Lee is 5.
Brandon Cooks is 6.
I'm going to take the over.
Ooh.
I'm going to take the over.
All right. So good start
there. I think
you
got a good chance there. Yeah. I'm not sure Kelvin Benjamin goes first round.
No,
that's one of the ones that depend. It seems like more and more mock drafts now are projecting him out of the first round. So he's probably the wild card in that. Next one, Eagles draft picks. We know how Howie Roseman loves to wheel and deal during draft weekend. Right now, the team only has 6. I'm going to set the mark. I'm going to make a little modest here. 6.5.
I'm going to take the over. And that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to make a move in round one. But I'm going to take the over that at some point we'll make some moves and we'll end up with more than 6.5.
Okay.
I'll take the under. I'll gamble.
Oh.
Good gamble. So we got a little bow going there. And we'll stick with the Howie Roseman and trading theme here. How many draft weekend trades will the Eagles make? I'm going to set the mark at 2.5. And I will preface this with it could be player or pick. Doesn't have to just be for picks. It could be a player involved. So any trade during the course of the 3-day draft weekend.
I'm gonna stick under. It only makes sense with the 6 picks.
Okay.
I'm gonna go over just to stay consistent. I think that you could see some movement there. That would make some sense.
All right. We're gonna stick with offense here. Quarterbacks. All talks about where's Johnny Manziel gonna go. Will Teddy Bridgewater fall possibly out of the first round? How many quarterbacks, and I'm just going to limit to the top 10 selections of the 2014 NFL draft, and I'm going to put it at 1.5. Fran, over under on quarterbacks selected in the top 10, setting the mark at 1.5.
I'm going to take the over. I think Bortles and I think Teddy Bridgewater is going to end up going in the top 10.
I'm going to go over as well.
Okay.
I'm going to follow your suit, although I think. One of the two might be Manziel.
Do you think 3 could go?
It's possible.
Mm. All right. Should have made that the mark. Maybe I should have made that the mark.
People are talking about Derek Carr still possibly going in that area too. So,
well, he said in an interview with NFL Network that he's been told pretty much that he's going to be the first quarterback taken. So I don't know who's told him that.
This could be
Matt Millen told him.
1.5 could go up to 4. So,
we got at least guaranteed you guys are going to win one there. So.
All right.
So, folks, that is our over-under segment looking at some props bets for the 2014 NFL draft. We're now going to just take a quick look at some of the mock drafts and who the Eagles could be picking in the first round. And I'm going to start with Josh Norris from RotoWorld, who I thought did a very, very good mock draft from the standpoint where he went away from the groupthink philosophy and tried to make some trades in and just really, I think, threw some curveballs in there, some things that people haven't really discussed before. And he's one of the people who thinks that the Eagles might go inside linebacker and peg C.J. Mosley as the Eagles pick at number 22. I know we talked about Mosley already, so obviously it would be a good fit there if they were able to land him. But just your thoughts on the possibility that that would be where they go.
Yeah, I think it's possible. I think he could very well be the best player on their board if he's available at 22, and I think it would be a good pick. That's all.
I think Mosley had been talked about for the most part leading throughout this whole fall that he was going to be a top 15 pick. So getting him at 22 would be good value.
Let's see. Jeff Mosher, local beat writer for CSNPhilly.com, goes with Ryan Shazier from Ohio State. Let's see. Eric Galko from Optimum Scouting goes with an edge rusher, D. Ford from Auburn at number 22. He was someone that Mayock, I think, linked to the Eagles as a possibility there at number 22. your take on him making the transition there to being an outside linebacker for the Eagles.
And that's the thing, is that it would be a transition. So, you know, at the Senior Bowl, we didn't get to see him doing too much standing up. In college, he was on the, you know, hand on the ground the entire time. So you're going to have to make a transition there to playing outside linebacker. How is he going to react to playing in space? And that's a question that remains to be answered at this point.
Does have tremendous speed off the edge.
No doubt.
Is a productive guy, played in the SEC. And he was, even though he was playing defensive end at the Senior Bowl, he was the best pass rusher there that week. So it's a pick that could make some sense, but yeah, there would be a bit of a transition.
Our guest on this week's Journey to the Draft podcast, presented by AAA, is none other than our resident draft guru himself, Led Zeppelin aficionado, and the man who runs DraftInsider.net, Tony Pauline. Give it up for Tony Pauline, everyone. Tony, you've been doing phenomenal
work.
Our
first repeat guest. This is exciting.
Yes. Phenomenal work on DraftInsider.net. Over 260 scouting reports, if I'm correct now. Is that what you're up to now?
That's only half. I mean, but when all is said and done, we'll have actually closer to 760.
Yikes.
So, yeah, obviously my time has been consumed with that the past month and a half. You know, I think the scouting reports, everyone will like to do the top guys and the guys that are going to be drafted. I like to do as many guys as possible because – there's always some guy that slips through the cracks, becomes an undrafted free agent. I mean, the Eagles faced one of them, and a guy by the name of Victor Cruz, who I did a report on years ago. Someone who's an undrafted free agent who, you know, has an impact some way, somehow or another at the next level. So it's good to get that information on those players out there.
Tony, you've been breaking news left and right on your Twitter account, at Tony Pauline, and one of the big items that you had of late was that the Eagles are among the teams that are very much interested and potentially moving up for wide receiver Mike Evans. The thing is that they only have 6 picks right now in this year's draft. Why do you think that they are targeting Evans, and do you think that such a run is possible?
Well, I don't know if they're specifically targeting him. I know that they do like him. If the opportunity makes itself available, I think that they would move up to grab him. The problem for the Eagles is Mike Evans has caught fire. He's moved up draft boards. I mean, he's had some good pro day workouts. He had a good combine. A little bit faster than everyone thinks. He's got that size that everyone wants in the receiver position these days. He's also has a great amount of upside. So that's a problem for the Eagles. But I think if the right opportunity is there, if it's not going to cost them a king's ransom, maybe they use some picks in this year's draft. Also, maybe some picks in next year's draft if they feel that, you know, after losing DeSean Jackson, granted Mike Evans is a different type of receiver, it's going to make their offense more effective.
It's hard to imagine or justify trading up for a receiver in the first round when there are so many good receivers in this year's draft, historically a great wide receiver draft. What makes Mike Evans so much better than that second level of wide receiver prospect?
Number one, his size. I mean, 6'4 and a half, 231 pounds. You look at him, he basically he's just shy of tight end size. You put another 10 to 15 pounds on him, he's a move tight end. But he runs under 4'5". He plays the receiver position well. You know, the fact of the matter is this, and I know I've been stamped as a Johnny Manziel detractor, but I think if you take Mike Evans off of that Texas A&M team, Johnny Manziel is not as effective on the college level as he's been the past 2 years if you watch the film. Evans is a guy who goes up and fights to get the ball. He gets up in a crowd. He can run well after the catch. People will say, well, what about Kelvin Benjamin of Florida State, who's got similar size, but Benjamin is not as polished. Benjamin is not as quick. He's not as fast. He wasn't the guy. I think the thing that really stood out to me about Mike Evans was he was the go-to guy for the most part for the past 2 years at Texas A&M, and opposing defenses in the SEC could not stop him. So there's just so much to like about his game now, and he comes with a great amount of upside potential.
Tony, where Mike Evans ultimately ends up in the draft is obviously going to depend a little bit on where Sammy Watkins ends up. What do you think is the earliest that Sammy Watkins could come off the board?
You know, I think maybe 4 to Cleveland. I don't have Sammy Watkins rated as highly as a lot of other teams, and I think, you know, there is a difference amongst teams. There are some teams that love him. There are some teams that say, you know what, he's a good receiver, but he's not a special talent. I could see Watkins, you know, tumbling a little bit further, maybe 5, 6, or 7 in the draft than people initially project. I can't see the St. Louis Rams sitting there taking him with the second choice of the draft after they moved up to get Tavon Austin last year. So I think Watkins is, you know, I don't know if he's not a top 5 pick on my board. I think he's going to fall on that somewhere in that second quadrant of 4 picks in round 1.
Tony, if the Eagles decide to wait at 22 for a receiver instead of move up for a Mike Evans, who would be a guy they could potentially target there?
two guys. I know one guy that we've talked about before previously on the podcast would be Brandon Cooks of Oregon State. He's very much a Chip Kelly type of player. He's quick, he's fast, he's explosive, he's a playmaker, he's dangerous in the open field. He's a little bit short, under 5'10", but he plays big. You get him in the open space, he can score from any point on the field. He was a great college receiver who really was almost that go-to guy in that Oregon State offense at the receiver position. He's not afraid to battle, but he's also fast. He had a terrific combine workout. He's a guy that you can use at receiver. You can line him up at the flanks, in the slot. You can use him to run reverses. You can use him as a return specialist. So that's one guy I think that I know the Eagles like, and someone I think that they would earmark if they don't make any moves. The other guy that I'm hearing that they like a bit is Marquise Lee of USC, who in my mind is one of the most underrated prospects or receiver prospects in this year's draft. You go back to August of 2013, a lot of people, including myself, thought Marquise Lee was top 10 potential. Had a knee injury last year, struggled throughout the year, even though he played with the knee injury. Basically, he's coming into the draft not the same type of receiver that he was because of that injury. What he is he's a reliable, dependable pass catcher. He runs good routes. He knows how to get open. He creates running after the catch. He picks up big yardage running after the catch, which is very important, I think, in that Eagles offense. So I think Marquise Lee of USC is another guy that they would target or would fit that system. Strangely enough, the one guy who I've not heard them associated with in this early going, although we've got under a month left, is Odell Beckham Jr. of LSU. For whatever reason, I don't know, maybe they're keeping it under wraps, maybe they're just not interested in him, but I've not heard Beckham's name associated with the Eagles thus far.
You know, one of the things that people always talk about in the lead-up to the draft is how are guys moving up draft boards. You don't really improve from the end of the season until the draft process. Meanwhile, you are making a bit of a move. You added the S to Marquise Lee there after dropping it earlier when you joined us, but you dropped it again. So you're not a finished product, Tony, but you're making improvements, which is good to hear. But along those lines, is there anybody who you think is quote-unquote moving up draft boards who is higher ranked now that you've talked to more teams than you maybe thought about a month ago?
Well, obviously, the name that would come to the forefront would be Khalil Mack. I mean, we thought maybe a top 12 pick. Mack has definitely moved into that top 5 or 6 range. So that's a guy who's moved up. Obviously, Greg Robinson of Auburn, who's moved up. He's probably going to be a top 6 selection. Where he ends up, I don't know. But a guy like Robinson, who's an underclassman, sometimes it's tough to gauge. A lot of teams, they think he's a very good tackle now who could be a great tackle later on. I'm also hearing Connie Ely of Missouri, the defensive end who can line up a 2-gap end. You can use him as a 3 technique tackle. You can use him in a number of spaces. He's also moved up. So those three guys have moved up, as has Zach Martin, the offensive lineman from Notre Dame. A lot of people think that Zach Martin, or a lot of teams have Zach Martin rated higher than Taylor Lewan of Michigan on their boards, because of the fact that they feel he can play any of 4 offensive line positions. They can feel he can play left tackle, right tackle, or either guard spot. I think he's more of a left tackle guard type of offensive lineman. I don't think he's going to be able to play right tackle, but teams do like that versatility versus Taylor Lewan, who for some reason or another seems to be slipping down draft boards. I don't agree with it. I think Lewan is the most underrated tackle or underappreciated tackle in this year's draft, but he has seemed to kind of taken a fall down boards.
Another tackle who is kind of slipping down board seemingly is Cyrus Kwanjo at Alabama. Tony, what's the latest with him and his injury status coming out of Alabama?
It's all in the eye of the beholder. I mean, it's an arthritic condition. It's just a matter of, you know, when teams think, do teams think that it's going to shorten his career? Do they think it's going to be a problem, you know, 2 years down the road? Do they think it's going to be a problem on a week-in, week-out basis, the way that the arthritic conditions can kind of flare up at times? I think the bigger problem for Kwanjo was, he didn't play well in 2013. If you watch his 2012 film, he really looked like a dominant left tackle in that Alabama system. Last year, he was struggling with the speedy edge rushers really from the get-go. If you watch that first game against Virginia Tech, and they got James Gale, and they got another kid who's underrated by the name of Jared Collins, couldn't control him. I mean, he was bending at the waist. He was off balance, reaching for him. So I think Quandro's knee is just a portion of the reason why he's fallen down draft boards. His 2013 game film, which was not good, and his combine workout, which was awful, are two other reasons why he's falling down, taking a tumble.
Hey, Tony, what is the draft value of the guys who have suffered recent injuries? I'm thinking of Aaron Colvin and Brandon Thomas, who just got hurt. What is traditionally those guys who would probably have been second-round picks in that area? Where do you think they'll go on draft day?
It's going to hurt Colvin because of his position. I mean, because of the fact that he is a cornerback. So he's got to, not only does he have to get healthy, but he's got to show he hasn't lost a step on his game. When you compare it to Brandon Thomas, I mean, I could still see Thomas going in that fourth round area because the incidence of offensive linemen returning from that sort of injury, you know, is a lot more frequent, and he has a greater opportunity compared to a guy, a cornerback like Colvin, who, you know, had some problems in his game making plays with his back to the ball. Now he's got a knee injury that he's got to rehab from. I mean, the Eagles took that kid from Wisconsin about 10 years ago, 8 years ago, who had the knee injury.
Yep.
Exactly, who really didn't really amount to much. So I think it's kind of a risky sort of thing when you're looking at the defensive back, you're looking at a receiver, you're looking at a running back, a player who really relies on his leg. Not that offensive linemen don't rely on their legs, but they do in a different capacity.
Our guest on this week's Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA, none other than Tony Pauline from DraftInsider.net. And Tony, you were one of the few people who pegged center Travis Frederick as a first-round pick last year when he was a surprise player. Everyone was shocked that the Cowboys took him in the first round. You actually reported earlier in the process, the draft process, that he was a guy who was mentioned as a first-round possibility. Who's a possible surprise player that no one is really talking about now, but come May 8th in New York City, could be a first-round pick?
Well, this was something I was actually going to hold, but since you asked me, I'll let it out there now.
Thank you, Tony. Appreciate
it. There you go. It's going to be, from what I'm hearing, it could be another center. Weston Richburg out of Colorado State is a guy who could surprisingly fall into that last that bottom third of round one. A lot of teams figure, or most teams figure, he is the top center in the draft. He's a versatile guy. You can use him in a variety of systems. You look at Frederick a year ago, he was basically a ball control, grinded out, power running type of center who was best straight ahead. Richburg is a guy who you can play in a ball control, but he's also very nimble. He's good on his feet. You can use him in a zone blocking system. You can use him in motion. So you think of the teams who are drafting late in round one that need centers that like those mobile offensive linemen. It's Weston Richburg of Colorado State, who could slide into the late part of round one.
Tony, we've talked about this in the past, but I want to let the listeners in. Describe to the people who don't know what your video layer is like, what your setup is.
Well, I mean, it's a lot of televisions, it's a lot of DVR machines. I also have a lot of VHS machines. I actually have
VHS machines. They still exist.
They still do. Believe me, you know, you got to reuse those VHS. You know, we got to be green friendly or earth friendly or whatever you want to call it. I have one little alcove here. I'm looking at my room. There's like basically 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 8 shelves which are dedicated to nothing but DVDs, videos, and game film. And I keep that all year round. And what I'll do is once the draft is over, once the 2014 draft is over, I'll take about 2 weeks, and then towards the end of May, because the draft is a little late this week, I'll start hitting that film again to get ready for the 2015 draft.
So what do you do with the old tapes?
Basically, I reuse them. If they're DVDs, they could be I either have to send them back or I keep them. I'll try and keep them for 3 to 4 years until guys graduate, and the guys that are on those DVDs are either in the league or they're no longer playing football. It's always good to keep them because, you know, what happens is sometimes you get a guy who transfers, you get a guy who's injured, you get a guy who may be academically ineligible. Terrence Hackney, an offensive lineman from Bethune-Cookman, perfect example. A guy who up the 2012 film showed a lot of potential, was a very good player, didn't play in 2013 because he was academically ineligible. You know, you go back to that game film that you had from 2011, 2012, so I can write the report on Terrence Hackney.
What are those guys that kind of fits that mold, Tony? Obviously, he hadn't played at a big-time level since 2011 at Georgia. It was Isaiah Crowell from Alabama State, the running back. What is your take on him?
I think he's a late-round pick. I don't think he's a feature runner at the next level. He played okay at Alabama State. I believe he had an ankle injury this year, which kind of set him back. He's a guy that I think you can use in a rotational type of system, someone who, you know, you're going to give the ball maybe 5 to 10 times a game, use him as a receiver out of the backfield. You know, he's a nice prospect in that last day of the draft, but I think when all said and done, he's number three or back at the next level.
Tony, another player that you have reported who will visit the Eagles is Larry Webster from Bloomsburg. He participated in the Senior Bowl. He's got good bloodlines. His dad was a defensive lineman in the NFL. What's your take on Webster, someone who hasn't even played the game all that long?
You know, he's a great athlete who's got great upside potential, but when you watch the film, You walk away thinking that he's really, there's much more there that he can give. He's being branded as a soft player on the field, which I think is correct. I mean, he's a guy who was able to dominate the lower level of competition that he played at Bloomsburg because he's such a good athlete. He's so much bigger. He's so much quicker. He's mobile. He's a terrific pass rusher, makes a lot of plays in the backfield. But the fact is this is when he's blocked, he doesn't really work that hard to get off blocks. If the play is not in his immediate vicinity, he tends to basically take his foot off the throttle. He's not a guy that has that killer instinct. It really goes after ball carriers. A lot of teams working him out at the tight end position specifically because of that reason, because he doesn't show that killer mentality, that killer instinct that you want on defense. I think, you know, the sky is the limit for Webster. The fact is he's got to really dedicate himself and decide that he wants a career at the next level, because if he goes in with the same attitude that he's been playing the past 2 years, he's going to have a short-lived career in the NFL.
One guy that's got a similar body type was Will Clark from West Virginia, another guy we got to see up close down to the Senior Bowl and the Shrine Game. How do those two compare to each other?
Will Clark is the exact opposite. I mean, Will Clark is a guy who plays like his hair's on fire. I mean, he is the ultimate competitor. He goes hard, and he goes hard every down. I think Will Clark has made a lot more strides in his game the past year than Webster has. I mean, here's a guy in Will Clark really was basically overlooked by scouts who basically didn't pay too much attention to him. Really started to put his game together, make a lot of plays up the field, in the backfield, but also did well against the run last year as a senior at West Virginia. I think what Clark, when you look at his body type, I think eventually he's going to fill out. He's going to be a defensive end in either a four-man line, can even be a two-gap end down the road. Great amount of upside for potential for Will Clark, and a guy who I think could fit into that third-round area, have an impact as a rookie, and then have a long NFL career.
We saw both Clark and Webster going at the Shrine Game, and then Clark ended up playing at the Senior Bowl as well. But you reported, Tony, that the Eagles were working out Clark as an outside linebacker. Do you think he has the athleticism to play that position?
Does he have the athleticism? Yes. I think he just may be a little bit too big and not, doesn't have that great agility as opposed to Webster. I mean, he is a pass rusher. He made a lot of plays behind the line of scrimmage this year, which is what you like to see. I think ultimately, though, he's going to line up with his hand in the dirt at the next level.
Tony, one of the players who has probably been arguably the most polarizing in the entire draft has been Texas A&M quarterback Johnny Manziel, Johnny Football himself. Have you dealt with a player who's been more polarizing in the draft process than Manziel in terms of the wide array of opinions from executives all across the board?
Tebow.
Oh, sure, you go back to Tim Tebow. I mean, was he going to be a quarterback? Was he going to be a tight end? You know, Johnny Manziel is going to be a quarterback primarily because you can't line him up in any other position. I think Tebow, you know, there was a huge, there was a wide variety of opinions, as you put it. It went to the Senior Bowl that year, played quarterback, really wasn't that good at quarterback, but I didn't really expect that much from him because I knew what I was getting. Then you had that whole situation leading up to the draft where they released these films where he changed his mechanics, and then he gets selected in the first round with Josh McDaniels making the calls out in Denver. So I think Tebow is sort of the same in sort of the same boat. I do think that Manziel is a little bit further along at the quarterback position, but I don't think I'm just concerned with Johnny Manziel. The things that made him great on the college level, I think, could be to his detriment in the NFL.
Do you think Manziel, or which player do you think it'll be in the first round that will kind of be the domino to really spike things along that would really shake up the draft this year?
It could be either quarterback. It could be either Manziel or Bridgewater. And you look at the Oakland Raiders with that selection, you know, where do they go? Because if they don't take a quarterback, I mean, those guys can start to tumble. Then it's just a question of, you know, do the Vikings take one of either Bridgewater or Manziel? My information, I'm going to assume in this hypothetical that Bortles is already off the board, whether he's taken first by the Houston Texans, whether he's taken third by the Jacksonville Jaguars. But I think either Manziel or Bridgewater, you know, if they're not selecting five, do the Vikings take them with their pick, who team that desperately needs a quarterback? My information is no. Vikings want a linebacker, and they're going to look for their quarterback in round two, preferably Zach Mettenberger. So I think it's not Johnny Manziel, but it's also Teddy Bridgewater, who if they're not taken early, you're going to see a shift in where players go in round one.
Tony, I want to ask you about two guys who I think in the beginning of the process were talked about as top 10, top 15 picks, and now sounds like maybe there's a chance they'll be there at 22 for the Eagles. Anthony Barr from UCLA and C.J. Mosley, the inside linebacker from Alabama.
Yeah, Yeah, I'd be surprised if either are available when the Eagles pick. I think both of them are being underrated. You go back to the question I was asked earlier about how, you know, all of a sudden these guys, their stock rises, you know, when really there's been no football played and there's nothing been done after the combine. And if they're rising, it means that somebody's fallen. I think what happens is when you read things on the outside, it's not necessarily what's going on inside war rooms, or they're just getting a little bit of piecemeal from what's going inside war rooms. I think that both of those guys you mentioned, Anthony Barr and C.J. Mosley, are just ridiculously underrated. I mean, Barr is a forceful linebacker, makes a lot of plays behind the line of scrimmage, a terrific 3-4 outside guy. I would be surprised if he gets outside the top 12. Same thing with C.J. Mosley. Not the pass rusher of Khalil Mack or Anthony Barr, not the guy who makes is forceful of the field, but really a three-down defender that can stop the run, and in third and five, if you need him in coverage, he's going to do a good job for you. I'd be shocked if either of those guys get out the top 15.
We're going to get to the fan questions in a sec, Tony. One final guy I wanted to ask you about at the outside linebacker spot the Eagles are reportedly bringing in for a visit, Louisville outside linebacker Marcus Smith. What are your thoughts on him?
Yeah, a good 3-4 outside guy, was primarily a defensive end at Louisville, natural pass rusher, fast up the field, quick off the edge. At the Senior Bowl, as I'm sure you guys remember, was used in space and did a solid job. I mean, he didn't embarrass himself. Was much better at it than, say, Michael Sam, who really struggled when he was asked to stand up and play in space. I think that would be somebody that the Eagles would look for in round two because there are a lot of teams that like him.
All right, Tony, we have a couple minutes to get to some of these fan questions that were submitted on Twitter. First one comes from @ForeverLoyal13. He wants to know, and we've talked about receivers already, do you think that the Eagles will get a big athletic receiver in this draft? So I guess it's really, do you think that not only are they going to go for an athletic receiver, but a big one in this year's class?
Well, the thing is, the top two big body receivers would be Mike Evans, who we already talked about, and Kelvin Benjamin. I don't know that the Eagles take Kelvin Benjamin, in the middle of round one, because I think that's a bit of a reach. If you're looking in round two, maybe Allen Robinson of Penn State, who I think could be there for him. Maybe Dante Moncrief of Mississippi, 6'2 and a half, 221 pounds, and a guy who, doesn't really wow you on film, but he's got a lot of upside potential, and he's shown enough. And then there's Jordan Matthews, who probably be sitting there in round three of Vanderbilt, the guy who's not very fast, but for the most part has been very productive and has been very dependable throughout his college career. So I think the opportunity will be there. And then another guy that I think we mentioned previously, Brandon Coleman of Rutgers. I mean, if he's there in round three, gosh forbid he flips to them in round four. I mean, a guy who a lot of people thought entering the 2013 season was potential first-round material, had the offseason knee injury, was a fraction of himself last year. But, hey, those knee injuries eventually heal. And if you can get a guy like Brandon Coleman in the third or fourth round and get him to play back to where he was in 2012, that could be the steal of the draft.
All right, Tony, we'll get to one more here from @BerryTree4, Michael Thornberry. He wants to know, Tony, do you think the Eagles will trade down to get more picks since they only have 6 right now in this year's draft?
Eagles, and we've talked about this before, and I've talked about with Dave Spadaro, they do a great job of working the draft. I mean, they trade up, they trade down, they get extra selections, they give away selections. I think that's a possibility. I'm not going to say, I can't tell you here because I don't know their specific plans and say, no, it's not going to happen. But based on past history, I think that's always a possibility because the Eagles have always liked to collect extra selections through the draft process.
Tony Pauline, outstanding insight as always. Make sure to follow him on Twitter @TonyPauline. If you have any more questions you want to shoot in his direction, and you have to check out draftinsider.net. I'm telling you, there are hundreds upon hundreds of scouting reports, detailed rankings for each and every position. Tony does a phenomenal job. Make sure to check it out. Our resident draft guru himself, Tony Pauline, joining us here on the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA.
Have a good day.
Phenomenal insight, as always, from the great Tony Pauline. Now we're going to introduce another new segment to finish out the show, our pro comparison. And look, it's an exercise that goes on in draft rooms throughout the NFL where the evaluators will look at a prospect and say, hey, who does this guy compare to in the NFL right now? And it's a fun exercise, and I think all the draft experts try to do the same because everyone wants to know, who does this guy resemble who's in the NFL now? Well, we're going to put a different twist on it. And instead of using an NFL player, we'll pick out someone from a movie, a fictional character, someone who, is not an actual NFL player.
Well, explain why this is a thing.
I think it was Matt Miller from Bleacher Report actually put this out on Twitter yesterday, that somebody that he talked to in the league, one of his sources, said that Teddy Bridgewater reminded him of Willie Beeman.
Which doesn't make any sense. They're completely different players.
Yeah. I mean, you know, obviously any given Sunday doesn't make any sense. But that's what spurned this
idea. It's a fun idea. So the guy you're giving Matt Millen credit for something is actually quite remarkable.
Well, Matt Miller. So now you're giving Matt Millen credit for something that he doesn't deserve. But, you know, really one of the things that – the first thing that I thought of was Bobby Boucher, water boy. And the guy who he most reminds me of, Jordan Sumwalt, UCLA. Guy who just plays with his hair on fire, plays from sideline to sideline, hits anything he sees. Jordan Sumwalt, Bobby Boucher.
Nice. That's pretty good. I don't, you know, I was thinking of, I was going for the characters first. I was thinking, you know, Shane Falco from, thank you for laughing, from The Replacements. I think he's got, he's a noodle armed lefty who was good in college and didn't do anything. I was thinking Kellen Moore.
How about Meggett from The Longest Yard, Nelly's character in The Longest Yard. You guys have, seen the newest edition.
Never saw it.
BT, Brian. Any help here?
It's a great, great movie.
Okay, I've got.
C-Mac, you've never seen The Longest Yard.
Never saw The Longest Yard.
Who would be this year's version of Cheeseburger Eddie, Brian?
the center from Florida State. Bo's favorite guy.
Brian Stork.
the Stork man. I was also thinking about since Willie Beeman, the backup, Dennis Quaid, the old. Gutty lefty, that's Mark Brunell for sure.
Well, that's good. Hanging on too long. There's a visual resemblance there a little bit too. True. I like that.
All I want to know is Teddy Bridgewater is going to do the Willie Beeman music video. Willie Beeman, remember that? And he's doing the sports drink.
I think I need to hear that one more time.
Willie Beeman. all he's doing is flexing and posing to the beach.
I don't know Teddy Bridgewater personally, but I just from what we've heard and what we've read, I don't think we'll be seeing that.
No, don't think so whatsoever. No.
See, there's a lot of interesting characters out there. Rod Tidwell from Jerry Maguire. Mm. Who would be this year's Rod Tidwell?
Campanero.
Of course.
Can we get the buzzer on that?
Yes. Thank you. Had to find a way
to
work in.
Colt Anderson as Rudy.
Oh. Well, yeah. All right.
That's not bad.
I mean, he makes a play on the kickoff coverage.
I guess he's actually more like Chris Maragos because he had to transfer in.
How about Spike from Little Giants? That's more like Maragos. I think that's probably a better comparison.
The annexation of Puerto Rico.
No.
Now, we want to make sure that you were not let off the hook.
I was.
Because, I knew you were expecting something, but we didn't want to give it to you at the front of the show either.
Yeah.
Because you would have been expecting it then, too. Okay. So, we know you went down to Florida. Now, the reason you gave us was that it was your brother's wedding, family vacation. But I think we know why you really decided to
go
down.
The real reason for it, okay?
Yeah. Celebrating the appearance on the Drexel 40 Under 40.
Thank you very much for that. They actually just came out with this year's edition, actually.
Did you make it?
No, not 2 years in a row. No.
Did anybody make it 2 years in a row? Do they like to move it around?
New slate. Okay. Whole new cast of characters. So, very, very nice. That's a good headshot.
Those pants that you're wearing very much resemble the pants that Bo was wearing when he was on safari in his most recent trip.
Well, on the shirt is the same shirt you're wearing.
The shirt the outfit's very similar. Got the brown shoes. I don't have the blue pants, but no, I did not get a Goofy hat while I was down there. The closest thing is what's on the mug.
And I was also thinking about the Goofy road trip movie. That was basically what you went on.
That pretty much was what it was.
I never saw the Goofy road trip movie.
How did you not see the Goofy road trip movie?
I was spending my time watching The Longest Yard.
Exactly. There you go.
You were spending your time watching tape.
Right. Okay.
I love it.
Let's call it spade a spade.
Bo, is this your Photoshop work, handiwork?
I certainly cannot reveal who made that. That's
yeah.
It's either Bo or Jimmy Kemsky, our good friend.
The quote bubble is the best. It's just the stick line around it.
Yes.
Les Bowen is a huge fan of the stick work.
That's right.
Very much a huge fan. Ask him about it sometimes.
Yes.
Go on Twitter, @ Les Bowen. What do you think of Jimmy Kemsky's artwork there? I'm sure he'll give you an honest opinion. So, very nicely well done. I appreciate it.
The Proud Dragon.
It's funny because I was expecting it, but once the show gets going, you forget that's going to happen. And I was like, oh, I guess it's not going to happen. So
gotta give you something.
So I'm glad you guys didn't let me off the hook there. So special thanks to our wonderful and talented producer, Brian Thomas, Matt Schultz, who's also listening in behind the scenes as well. And to you guys, to Bo Wolf, Fran Duffy, I'm Chris McPherson. And thank you very much for joining us on this week's edition of Journey to the Draft presented by AAA. We'll be back with more Draft Insight next week.